Hello, and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, a first-time guest in the book club this time. Jake Ebelin joins me. Welcome to the book club, Jake.
Thank you, Eamon. Nice to talk to you.
Yes, we set this up a while ago, I think, on Twitter, but nice to finally get round to it. I do have a long list of people to get to, but so Jake, you know what starts us off always when you're a first time in the book club, your 2000 AD origin story to fill us in on.
Indeed, yes. I suppose what started reading comics when I was very young, started reading what you'd call, I suppose, the comedy children's comics like Wizard and Chips and what have you. And I've got an older brother. He used to read the sort of war comics of the time, Victor, Warlord, and Battle. Yeah. That's obviously where I first saw the work of Carlos on things like Major Easy and El Mestito. And obviously I read Charlie's War, written by the great Pat Mills. Always been a fan of science fiction and of the generation of, I think I was six when Star Wars came out, and started reading a lot of science fiction books, which is where our review sort of comes from. And I think I started picking up 2000 AD around about the late 200s, maybe early 300s, and eventually I got around to reading it weekly, but I think I started at about 348, which I think was a Christmas issue, and I read it for quite a few years. Obviously loved all the work by Carlos and Judge Dredd and Rogue Trooper, Nemesis, but I think I then sort of went to follow a lot of the writers who cut their teeth in 2000 AD and went off to sort of read the American comics, really, Watchmen and Swamp Thing being big favourites of mine, written by the great Alan Moore, and read sort of Animal Man as well and lots of the DC stuff. Sort of drifted away from 2000 AD for a while, which was a bit of a shame, I suppose, but I don't know, some people say the 90s. Yeah, some sort of, well, I missed, I suppose, the 90s, where some people say it sort of went a bit off the boil a little. Yes. But I kept an eye on it for many years, often picking up collections and things, and just really got back into it when I saw that the Dark Justice storyline was starting up a few years back. Straight away. So I got caught up in it again, and that was it. I was hooked again, and went back and read quite a lot of stuff, and I'm reading it weekly now, and that and the Meg every month as well. And and now I'm catching up with the Judge Dredd collection and the 2000 AD collection. It's bringing back some great memories.
Oh, excellent. So you're getting all of that as well.
Yeah.
Plenty of content to refresh your familiarity with.
Well, indeed, and plenty that I missed. I missed storylines like America and things like that. So it's good stuff to read, and just amazing how Judge Dredd's gone from being what he was when I read it. Quite the sort of one-dimensional character, but certainly all the stuff about the mutants and the democracy movement have certainly taken him in a very different direction.
Yeah, fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Come back to it a few times on the podcast, but yeah, the wonderful stuff that John Wagner's built over the years.
Indeed, yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned science fiction. Obviously, you know, you're a fan and we're going to be talking about that. So fill us in. Tell us, what's the book you've chosen for the book club?
Well, I think I got in touch with you. Oh, how many months ago was that, Eamon?
Early part of 2017, I think.
Yes, it was. Yeah, and I suggested maybe covering the Stainless Steel Rat collection, which covers three of the Stainless Steel Rat books that were written by Harry Harrison. I think these were in the. Well, I think the first one was written in the 60s. It's certainly a book that I read, or certainly a series of books that I read when I was quite young, actually. Just a really good character. Loved him from the start, really. One of those sort of roguish type, Han Solo, almost a James Bond character as well. I don't know, I was hooked on it. It was one of the stories that came up very early in my 2000 AD reading, because I'd started at about 340 something, and I think the Stoney Steelback for President started in about 390 something.
393, that's the 393, third series. That's the one. So yeah, that was, as you say, you were reading it regularly then.
Yeah.
And was that your first experience with the Stainless Steel Rat, or had you read the novels as well?
I'd read the novels already. I was quite excited to read it, and I wasn't let down, obviously. I'd never read the first two until I got the collection, so it was good fun to read them, and it actually got me to read all the books again, which I've really enjoyed.
Excellent. So it's a 2010 collection from Rebellion we're looking at.
It is, yes.
That has the three stories that appeared in the prog. So there's the original, just called The Stainless Steel Rat, progs 140 to 151 from 1979. The Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World, that was a year later, 1980, 166 to 177. And then, as you say, the third one, which was when you were on board the prog, was The Stainless Steel Rat for President from 393 to 404. A few years later, that one, that was 1984.
Yeah, yeah, there's a bit of a gap there, wasn't there?
Yeah. And as you say, created originally by the science fiction author, but also he was a comics writer as well, wasn't he?
He was indeed, yeah.
Harry Harrison.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think he did write some Rick Random comics. I don't think he wrote any that appeared in the prog, but he did write some of those, I think, in the 60s as well.
Right, yeah.
Or the 50s, possibly. And yeah, Wikipedia says there was 13 Stainless Steel Rat books. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, round about that, yeah. When I first read them, the first book was obviously The Stainless Steel Rat, but he's written, write three prequels in the late 80s and the early 90s, which are based obviously before The Stainless Steel Rat, when he was he's a young man, right, shall we say.
I do remember, I remember reading the novels, I think, when I was a teenager, or at least some of the novels, and I haven't gone back to them over the years. So this was a welcome refresher for, as you say, a roguish character we'll be talking about in a minute. But yeah, and then obviously this is an adapted work for the prog. So it's adapted by Kelvin Gosnell. Obviously, it's Carlos Esquerra art, which we'll be
fantastic
talking about.
Fantastic stuff, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Lettered by Jack Potter, and the commissioning editor would have been Steve McManus. Although I do seem to remember, possibly from Thrill Power Overload, I think it might have been Kelvin Gosnell's idea.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I believe so. It was. I think it was kind of a 2008's idea to get a... I don't know if he's well known particularly, but someone that certainly science fiction fans liked, to try and get a few more people to get on board with the prog, I think.
Right, okay, to pick up some more of the science fiction readers after the initial Star Wars bump,
surge,
I suppose.
And I don't know if it worked. I don't know if sales particularly went up, but they're certainly all pretty good stories. I think they've been pretty well received from people that I've spoken to and comments I've seen.
Okay, so I'm guessing you've picked this story because, as you say, of your love of the books and the science fiction in general. You've sort of mentioned him. Who is the Stainless Steel Rat? Who is the central character?
Well, the Stainless Steel Rat is a man known as Slippery Jim DeGriz. He's kind of a sort of master criminal, con man, thief. He gets up to all sorts of misadventures, and uses all sorts of gadgets. I mean, he's just a very likable character, even though he's a thief.
He's a lovable rogue, isn't he?
He definitely is. Yeah, yeah. Certainly, there's a lot of humour in the books, and he's very, what would you say, sort of self-depreciating. He's just, I don't know, everything he gets into, he's got a way out. He's always one step ahead. And he's called the Stainless Steel Rat, really, because I think he says it in the first book, in Stainless Steel Rat, that criminals are like rats. They run around sort of alleyways and like a rat, they're trying to escape. Obviously, in the future, these alleyways are all made out of glass and steel, so therefore he has to become a Stainless Steel Rat. Yeah, he's just a great character, really well written, just very funny, and the character that they've produced in these adaptations is I don't know, kind of almost even more likable than the one in the books.
Right, I was wondering about the differences because, as I say, it's a long time since I've read the books.
Yeah.
So he's even more lovable in the 2000 AD version, is he then?
Well, I think so. I think that they're very well written stories, very well adapted. There's bits missing. We'll talk about that maybe as we talk about the stories. But the pace is kept very fast. The comedy is there for all to see, really. There's some very sort of funny moments in all the stories. Little winks to the camera and stuff like that. And just the way Carlos has drawn him is... it's not quite what I imagined when I read the books, let's just put it that way.
Okay, well, let's talk about the character design, because that is interesting. Because Carlos has depicted him in the comics. Well, I think it's fairly obvious that he's again referencing the Hollywood actor James Coburn, isn't he?
Yes, Carlos seems to like James Coburn, doesn't he?
Yes. I mean, in the other book I'm reading at the moment, Major Easy, again, you know, he's very similar looking there.
Yeah, and obviously you've got Cursed Earth Coburn as well.
Yeah,
he does seem to like him. This particular version of the James Coburn character reminds me a lot of the Our Man Flint films.
Yes, I was going to mention those.
That sort of time of Coburn's career, but he... he's a very similar character as well. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
Yeah, that's probably it. He had all the gadgets as well, didn't he? Yes.
He did, yeah.
Yes, the American James Bond with the gadgets and the girls. Were they 60s films, or they must have been, I guess?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I remember watching them as a child. Very funny.
Yeah. Okay, so Carlos has designed the character, and he looks a bit like James Coburn, and he's got, you know, it's a science fiction future story. He's got lots of great gadgets. He's got lots of disguises, and he's always got a way out of a trap. You really can't pin the stainless steel rat down, can you?
Oh, you can't now.
Yeah, he's usually got a way. Well, in fact, he's always got an exit planned. And a plan B. And of course, in the first story, he's introduced, he is a criminal.
Yes.
Although he's a criminal with a sort of moral code, as you know, he doesn't, he tries very hard that nobody gets hurt in any of his heists.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, that's something that's very, very well pointed out in all the books, actually. Even it goes back in the three prequels that he's, he doesn't want to harm anyone. And, the crimes that he commits are always against the rich and the powerful, or the corrupt anyway. Sort of, you know, the crimes he does don't have consequences to the common man. He looks at himself, I think, a little bit as a Robin Hood type character.
Yes, he does. He robs from the rich and helps out the poor.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in the first story, he does, I mean, having said he's always got a way out of a trap, he does seem to be cornered, and his
he does seem to get into scrapes and get into corners quite a lot. Again, I suppose, like a rat does, but he always manages to come up with some little plan to get him out of it, or there's something up his sleeve. He's just very well written, I think, very funny the way he does it all.
And then, of course, he gets recruited by the Special Corps.
Yeah,
he becomes some form of galactic secret agent in his own right, doesn't he?
He does. The Special Corps are a strange bunch. They've obviously been keeping an eye on Jim for a number of years, and seem to like what they see. They're an organisation that's been built up by a lot of ex-criminals. They seem to use the idea of using a thief to catch a thief, Yeah, he gets drafted into them, I think, sort of against his will. He's not particularly happy about it. But, yeah, he gets in there, and that's where his adventures really begin.
Yes, he meets Inskip, who will become his sort of boss, who he describes as Inskip the Uncatchable, my boyhood hero, King West. So, yeah, he was a criminal in his own right in his time, and now he's running the Special Corps. and recruits Slippery Jim DeGriz. And it's interesting because he also, I think he mentions in the first couple of issues that, you know, he's perhaps getting a little bit bored with his criminal life, and he's thinking, oh yeah, the Special Corps, this will be interesting for a while. This will sort of, you know,
spice it all up a bit, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So he's looking for a little bit more excitement, isn't he?
Yeah, I think the life of crime and stealing money from banks and corporations has maybe taken its toll on Jim a little. He's got a little bit bored with life in that respect. And although I don't think he's particularly happy about being drafted into the Special Corps, who are a sort of mythical organisation that people sort of know that they're there, but don't really believe that they're there. And he's always sort of kept his eyes open to try and avoid bumping into them if they do exist. And then he ends up working for them.
Yes, which means, if anything, even more gadgetry and spaceships and planet-hopping adventures.
Yes, never a dull moment in Jim's life. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but certainly in the second book, we start to see the behind-the-scenes Q-type character, Dr. Koipu, who comes up with all sorts of amazing gadgets that do some amazing things.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I suppose we should say it's Carlos art, which is black and white, although I think they did get some of the colour centre pages from time to time, because there's double page spreads, aren't there?
There are indeed.
Black and white collection. It's Carlos art. It's just fantastic to look at. He's wonderful character design. He does great spaceships. He does great gunfights and so on.
It's amazing some of it. It's just a shame that unfortunately this edition possibly hasn't used the actual art. It's had to look for photo stats and what have you to get it all together. Some of it doesn't come out as clearly as you'd hope it would, but even so, I mean, it's still stunning artwork.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, we've talked many a time about the difficulties of getting good copies from these the early progs, when perhaps stuff didn't wasn't being preserved for posterity, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so the first story, tell us a little bit. I mean, I've said, you know, he gets recruited. Tell us a little bit more about the caper in the first story.
Yeah, so after he gets recruited by the Special Corps, he ends up investigating a large battleship that's being built on a distant planet. War, it seems, has become something that just doesn't happen in the future. So he goes off to this planet to try and find what's going on about this giant warship that's being built. And just before he can apprehend the people that are building it, they manage to escape his clutches and fly off into space. And he obviously is a bit upset about this. Yes. And comes up with a plan to try and capture it, where he sort of disguises himself as a sort of galactic millionaire who's flying around in a ship of gold, I think it is. And eventually this giant ship turns up and tries to capture him. And he ends up getting onto the battleship and apprehending the criminal. But his girlfriend escapes, strangely. And then actually when they take the guy in, it turns out that it was actually the girlfriend who was in charge of the whole caper about the giant warship anyway. Again, Jim just can't take the fact that his prey has escaped again, so he tracks the girlfriend down and sort of corners her in a bar where she actually works out who he is and attacks him. And it's quite shocking. She nearly kills him.
Yes. Absolutely.
Quite a good scene. I mean, and in the book as well, it's very well written. Anyway, he takes a bullet to the head. He manages to survive, as these heroes tend to, especially the stainless steel rat. And he just can't let this go, so off he goes to try and catch her. And eventually, obviously, as a hero, he does. And they take her in, after it's quite a big adventure at the end where he disguises himself and there's a coup on a planet and she's involved in that and there's a war, like a civil war. It's just, there's so much going on. And eventually, yeah, the special corps turn up and arrest this woman. And there we go. That's the end of that story, sort of.
Yes, and of course, this is, you know, without too many spoilers, this is our introduction to another major character in the stainless steel mythos, which is, of course, the lovely Angelina.
Indeed, yes. So after he does catch her, obviously, he does end up actually marrying her, and they actually steal Inskip's ship and disappear off into the sunset for a honeymoon. And what a character she is. I mean, she's amazing. She's psychotic. She's beautiful. She's just an amazing character. And Carlos's version of her is just something to behold. He's got everything in that drawing. It's just amazing.
Yes. I mean, you know, as you say, the lovely Angelina is indeed with Carlos's drawings and inks is lovely to behold. And she's completely the match for Slippery Jim.
Oh, indeed, yeah.
Just in every aspect. And, of course, she becomes herself a valued sort of agent for the Special Corps, although, as you say, the first thing they do is steal his ship. The bit at the end, I mean, again, I'm probably spoiling this a little bit, but in the original novel, because there's the bit about whether how they get Angelina to work for the Special Corps, and that she has to be sort of deprogrammed as a sort of master.
Indeed,
criminal.
Yes, yeah.
Was that, you know, was there much made about that in the novel?
The adaptation's very, very, it's very close to the novel. She, as you see in the earlier in the episode when they, or earlier in the story rather, when they arrest her previous boyfriend, who helped build this giant ship, this battleship, when they capture him, they basically lobotomize him. And he ends up an idiot. Spilling his drinks in the canteen and falling over and not knowing who he is and all sorts. It turns out at the end of the book they've perfected the technique and basically they just remove Angelina's violent and psychotic streak, or they think they have, as we'll discover in the other two stories.
Yes.
It's very honest and very close to what happens in the book.
Okay.
Yeah, the only thing that really is very different in this book and in this adaptation, actually, is one of the things I really wanted to talk about, because obviously they've had to make some differences because the books are quite long. There's more going on in the books, and these are quite fast paced comic stories.
Yeah.
But when in the novel, when Angelina shoots Jim, he doesn't just recover and wear a moustache to disguise himself. He actually goes through some major reconstructive surgery, so he doesn't even look like himself anymore. And that goes on for about 3 or 4 chapters because he kidnaps a doctor and all sorts of things. So it's quite interesting to see what they missed out and, you know, how they kept the momentum going for a, you know, comic version of the story.
Right. Yes, here he fakes his death and then comes back with some hair dye and a mustache, basically. Yeah.
He does. It's the classic comic disguise, isn't it? Put on some glasses or wear a mustache and dye your hair.
Dye your hair, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Okay, so that's the first story, and of course that was the first novel.
Yeah.
So then they come back in the prog next year with The Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World. Now, whereabouts in the timeline does that come in the novels? Do you know?
I can check, actually, but I think it's about book 6.
Right.
So there's quite a few more before that. It is actually book 6, but that's book 6 including the 3 prequels. So it would have been the 3rd of the original novels.
Right. Okay. Because as I say, you know, one thing obviously I noticed about these 3 separate stories is that we seem to be at sort of 3 different times in the Jim and Angelina life story, as it were.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah.
Because we'll talk about their kids, basically.
We will. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so we're, the next one we're on to is Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World, which is quite different from the first book. It's a time-traveling adventure where something happens and Jim has to travel back in time to sort out all sorts of things that are going on. It's quite a sprawling story, really, in terms of time travel.
Yeah, and I particularly love the first page of the Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World, which has got Jim and Angelina with their guns blasting with a sort of backdrop of a planet, and there's some time travel sort of scenes going on around them. It's a great first opening page.
It's a movie poster, isn't it, Eamon?
It is.
Reminiscent of the Star Wars posters and of the time, and yes, it's another fantastic piece of art by Carlos. Yeah. He just never ceases to amaze me, really. Yeah, brilliant stuff.
Okay, so fill us in on the Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World. What's the sort of basic plot for that one?
Wow, where to start? Start at the beginning, I suppose. Jim's being debriefed by Inskip over his previous caper, when suddenly Inskip just vanishes into thin air. All these people suddenly steam into the room, all covered in masks, and he ends up getting caught by them all, and they drag him off, and he thinks someone's got him, you know, someone's attacking the core. Actually, he's correct. Someone is attacking the core, but actually the people that dragged him out are actually members of the core. It's their science department, which is led by the previously mentioned Koipu, who, like I said, is a sort of Q-type character, comes up with all these crazy weapons and stuff like that. He explains that people from the core are just disappearing because a master criminal has travelled back in time, and he's basically murdering the... or destroying the lives of their ancestors. This guy is called just He, which sounds very ominous. Koipu has invented a time machine, so that's it. Jim's going back in time, and just as he's trying to actually talk his way out of going back in time, he gets a call from Angelina, and she, shock horror, disappears while she's sitting in front of him on the video screen, with her two babies in her arms. So this is this is the children of Jim and Angelina, named James and Bolivar, which is obviously his first name, Jim, James, and his middle name is Bolivar as well. So they are named after Jim himself, and they're boy twins. They're good characters in the books as well. So yeah, so he's convinced then that's it. He has to go back in time to save his family, and by way of doing that, as he also ends up having to save the core as well. So he ends up travelling back to the 1970s, where all sorts of crazy things happen. He bumps into a biker gang, and it's a little bit reminiscent of the scene in the Terminator movie.
Yes.
I think. And there's some great artwork by Carlos. Lots of like big 1970s American cars and biker gangs with leather jackets. It's just fantastic stuff. And eventually he tracks down this He character who, yeah, he's a strange looking chap, I think.
Yes.
He's looks a bit like a demon, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got a demonic look to him with his sort of central streak of white hair and running back on his head. He wouldn't look out of place as a strontium dog villain, actually, would he?
No, yeah, he really does strike me as someone that Johnny and Wolf might have come up against at some point as well. Anyway, he tracks him down, but he can't actually, again, this is a reoccurring thing, I suppose. He manages to escape, just like Angelina did in the first book. Jim manages to track him down. Now he's gone back further in time, and he's gone back to the Napoleonic era. And when Jim lands, it's very odd. It's Napoleon's won at the war. He's had victory against the British, and it turns out that it's because He has given him future weaponry.
Yes, it's the Napoleonic Wars with tanks
indeed.
And fighter
jets.
Planes.
Yes, yeah. it's Yes, it's the sort of thing Carlos does love to draw, I think, as well. I think his history in sort of war comics and things, he does like to draw an explosion, doesn't he?
He does, yes, and he does it very well. And of course, as you say, those 70s war comics that he sort of cut his teeth on, you know, as you say, Major Easy and... What was the freedom fighter one you mentioned?
Oh, El Mestizo, yeah.
El Mestizo, yeah, that was it. And yeah, here we are in the Napoleonic Wars with explosions and tanks and Jim in all sorts of trouble. And as you say, this mysterious character, he, who for most of the book is just one jump ahead in most things.
Quite literally, a time jump.
A time jump, yeah. I quite like the time jump technology that Koipu gives him, which is this time helix that they have to set up.
Yeah, it's a strange-looking device, isn't it? It's like a giant coiled radioactive spring.
Yes. Do you remember a television show from, I think, from Irwin Allen, The Time Tunnel?
I do, yes. It's reminiscent of that, isn't it?
It's a little bit like the spiral tube they would go down in that before they became lost in time, I think.
Indeed.
But yes, it's great stuff. And yes, he seems to be always jumping backwards in time. And Jim is on his trail with Koipu's technology.
Indeed. There's also an interesting thing where Koipu's downloaded his brain into a little box that Jim can plug into his head. So that he can build a new time machine if he needs to. And it's quite a funny scene. It's very short in the comic, but in the book, there's a, when he comes around from having done that, there's a whole sort of talking to himself, trying to get Koipu out of his head sort of thing, which is quite amusing. I think I've seen it in some other sort of time travel type books that I've read after this. But where were we? So, yes, like you say, he's one step ahead. Quite literally, he's about to jump again as Jim confronts him. He manages to hurt Jim and jumps into his time helix, but Jim manages to somehow damage the time helix controls and sends he into a time-traveling spiral, and no one he doesn't know where he's going, and Jim doesn't know where he's going. And then everything starts going dark around Jim, and he thinks that's it. The time's been wiped out. He's failed in his mission. When suddenly, out of nowhere, a figure appears. And who is it? It's our favourite.
Yes.
It's Angelina. And she appears to Jim and says, "That's it. We know where he's gone. Come with me, and us two will finish this job off." She reassures him that the boys are all okay. And obviously Jim's more than happy about that. And it turns out that by sending he into this time spiral, he's actually ended up in the distant future, towards the end of Earth's lifetime. And just as the humans are all leaving Earth, which is obviously what happens in the end, and that's where Jim comes from, why no one knows of this place called Earth, or Dirt, as they like to call it. Yeah, so they travel to the future, and yet again, Jim uses all sorts of gadgetry and stuff to track he down. He manages to enlist an army of people, of humans that were settled on Mars that have got a particular hate of he as well, because obviously he's been ruining things for them in the future. And he finally confronts him, and it kind of feels like he escapes again, but actually Jim sends him into a time loop, and it ends up that he's just going round and round in circles thinking that he might have destroyed the special core. And it all works out lovely in the end, and off goes Jim and Angelina back to their lives, and there are their children, Jim and James and Bolivar, and they're pretty much all grown up at this point.
Yes, they've... they seem to have missed 4 years.
Yeah. I think they're... Yeah, they're sort of a little bit more than toddlers, and getting into all sorts of trouble. I think Professor Koipu is quite happy to see the back of them once Jim and Angelina come back.
I'm taking you back a bit, but there's a great bit, as you say, that cliffhanger at the end of one prog's worth of story, where it seems like he's been defeated and time is blacking out. And then, as you say, in the next episode, Angelina pops up. And I loved the bit. First of all, she looks glorious.
Yes.
In a sort of time traveling suit. And secondly, she says, you're as bad as Coypool, all this prattling about paradoxes and vortexes. Just leave those handcuffs to me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, she's no nonsense, isn't she? You know, we might get our a little bit confused with all the time jumps, but no, Angelina, no, she's right in there.
Oh,
what needs to be done.
I mean, as soon as they make that jump as well, I mean, Jim straight into a trouble, nearly gets eaten by a giant snake.
Yeah.
Who sorts the issue out? It's Angelina with her gun. I think the court failed. They failed a little in removing her psychotic streak.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yes. She's also good at the vicious killer part, as Jim says.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. She's got some moves on her. She's always quite happy with the very 1970s James Bond type karate chop.
Yeah. Here's a weird thing I noticed in the artwork for this one. When they're in the future and the guy in the helmet and the beard is telling the story of their survival, I don't know if you noticed that I spotted this, I think the last time I read this story, was that there's a famous painting called The Raft of the Medusa. I don't know if you're familiar with it at all, about, you know, survive. It's actually on the front cover of the Pogues album, Rum, Sodomy and the Lash.
Oh, right, yes, yes.
And it looks to me like Carlos has done his own little tribute to that painting in one scene where they are struggling for survival on a raft.
Yes, sort of, yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, you're right. It's very reminiscent of that, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I just noted it as a little sort of art thing as we go along. Because, you know, again, Carlos, he draws a great bad guy. He draws a wonderful Angelina, a wonderful stainless steel rat. And then, of course, over the page, he does these fantastic strongholds or citadels, these huge towers that the bad guys usually hold up in.
Yeah, yeah, they're incredible, aren't they? They're very reminiscent of some other stuff that he's done in the past. They sort of, I don't know, it's almost like they're castles carved out of the rock, isn't it? And they're just amazing.
Yeah, great stuff.
The other thing I noticed as well is that the chap with the helmet that you were talking about, that's a very strontium dog helmet, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yes, you can see
it's just like Johnny's hat.
It's not too far from the Johnny Alpha hat, right, yeah. Great stuff, yeah. So a terrific time-travelling adventure, which, as we've said, does have obviously a happy ending. And then we jump in time ourselves, because it's going to be 4 years in the prog before they bring him back. And this is the stainless steel rat for president, obviously.
Yeah.
And by this point in his life story, the boys have grown up and are just as sort of competent and as deadly as their parents.
Yes, I mean they're young men now, aren't they?
Yes, and so they're part of the team. And again, whereabouts does this figure in the original novels?
So in the sort of chronological order, it'll be the eighth novel. So in the original order, it's the fourth or fifth, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So jumping about a bit, picking the stories, obviously. So I think this one goes back to about 10 episodes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all about, I guess, about 10 or 11 episodes long. And I'm going to ask you in a minute about the artwork and the reproduction in the collection we've been looking at for this one.
Yeah.
Because there does seem to be a change.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
But first of all, let's have the sort of like the outline of the plot. Why is he running for president?
Yes. Yeah, it's a strange premise, isn't it? But it kind of makes sense. I mean, we start with Jim and Angelina enjoying a meal in a lovely restaurant, taking a well-earned break. Presumably, they've been doing a lot of work for the Corps and what have you. When suddenly, it's like the police break the party up. Jim runs. Angelina's going to do her thing and probably take a few of the coppers out. And eventually, actually, Jim gets back to the hotel room, having escaped, when Angelina opens the door and she's followed by the police.
Yes.
And actually she's not just karate chopped them all and run off. She's obviously spoken to them. It turns out that they only want to speak to Jim. Someone's been murdered, and the only thing that this murder victim had on him was a small bit of paper that says "the stainless steel rat" on it. So they just want to know if he knows the guy, and he doesn't. But they manage to trace this guy down to a planet that's called Pariso Aki. I think that's how it's pronounced. It's yes. Spanish. And so Jim and Angelina go there, sort of pretend to be on holiday, and find out that it's actually quite a funny place. It's a lovely place that people love to go on holiday, but it's actually governed by a terrible dictator. And while Jim's there, he bumps into someone that tries to enlist him to do some work. And I don't think he really wants to at first, but the head of the secret police sort of takes a bit of an interest in Jim. And I think that's what sways his opinion of whether he should help or not. He's quite a nasty piece of work. This Oliveira, I think his name is, in the book. I don't know if it's mentioned in the comic. I was trying to see last night.
Right.
So they go away, and then they come back and hatch up this incredible plan. They join the resistance, and they end up going to meet a member of the sort of rich and powerful who wants to depose the terrible dictator, whose name is Zapilote. Yes. And he's a very old looking chap. His skin's literally hanging off of him, and in the book he's been in charge for hundreds of years and has used youth serums to keep himself in charge that long. The guy that he meets with sort of talks him into standing for president, but he has to pretend obviously that he's from the planet. So he takes the guy's nephew's persona and becomes known as Hector Harapo. And then off we go. Lots of adventures on how they try to fix the election, fix the fixed election as it is as well, using the media and all the sort of weaponry that they have on board. And it's just an amazing adventure. The boys do all sorts of things. I mean, they fly a spaceship, they fly helicopters. They're just as good with guns and crime and stealth as their parents, like you say. Yeah, there's some really good characters in it, some very well-drawn stuff as well. I mean, it's some brilliant stuff in this one.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is fantastic stuff. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, they're up against this despotic dictator. I mean, you know, the day we're recording, it just so happens that Robert Mugabe might finally have actually resigned. But of course, Carlos, drawing this stuff, who grew up in, you know, Franco's Spain.
Indeed, it does have a little whiff of that Franco type uniforms and things, which, as we know, Carlos does like to sneak this stuff into quite a lot of his designs. I mean, he even goes so far as to say that Judge Dredd's a lot to do with that as well, doesn't he?
Well, that's right. He said, you know, he has said that as well, that he's taken, you know, some of the imagery from that terrible regime and put it into his artwork. I also noted, as you say, he meets they arrive, they do this sort of space drop onto the planet.
It's brilliant, that scene, isn't it? Yes.
It is.
With their anti-gravity suits.
Yeah, the grab suits. And then they meet this member of the resistance who's the one who sort of like summoned them in the first place. And I did wonder if this is Carlos drawing himself into the comic. You
know? Yeah, he does look a little like him, doesn't he?
He does. You know, whether that was, you know, the droopy moustache from the 1980s. Yeah, artists do sometimes put themselves into their own strips, it seems, and I just wondered if this was an appearance by Carlos in the comic.
I think so. I like to think so. And I think as we alluded to earlier, the artwork in this, I think it's obviously something that Carlos really did throw himself into with all of the, you know, the thinking back to his past with the Franco era and all that. It's just so well drawn. It's amazing.
Yes, because as you say, the guy they're trying to overthrow is absolutely appalling. So, yeah, I'm sure Carlos was able to put a lot of that into the artwork. And the other thing, because as I say, I'm reading Major Easy at the moment, And I noticed their battle car that they have. It's not unlike Major Easy's Bentley or Cursed Earth Coburn's.
Yes, it's not, is it? They're very, very... Carlos's style of drawing vehicles, like these, well, the future vehicles, they're very curvy, aren't they? Very grand machines. I just love his art. It's just amazing stuff. Yeah. All the curves and all it's almost like a throwback to a 1940s car, but in a modern sort of style. It's great stuff.
The other thing I noticed, particularly, I don't know if it's because I'm on the digital version. Are you on the paper?
I'm on the paper. Yeah.
Right.
Very happy. And
yes. We'll talk about that now. Hard to get hold of, unfortunately. But I did notice for the stainless steel wrap for President that the reproduction in my version is a lot sharper.
It definitely is. Yeah. Yeah. It's. I don't know if they found the original art or what, but the reproduction is much better.
Well, I may have my timings wrong, but I'm just wondering if between 1980 and 1984, with things like Forbidden Planet and Titan books, where perhaps they began to realise that this stuff, you know, might have a second life in collected editions.
Yeah.
So I wondered whether this is from the original artwork or whether it's from the original films that were taken of that, but it's certainly pin sharp, isn't it?
It is, it's really good. Yeah, I mean, like you say, the previous two, there are pages where it's the ink drawing is very it's very dark and there's not many fine lines in it, but this one, everything's in there. It's really well reproduced.
Yeah, and I suppose there's also, you know, Carlos is also getting, you know, he's getting even better.
Oh, yeah.
he was astonishing to start with, and he's getting even better. So I did particularly think the third story just looked glorious. And it's all go. There's helicopter gunships. As we say, they've got this sort of road cruiser battle car. There's castles and... walls and fortresses to attack, and all done with Slippery Jim's usual sort of style panache, plus the splendid Angelina and the two boys.
Yes, I mean she really comes into her own in this one. I think there's certain points where she takes over, and the boys are great. They're not just there in the background. They're a major part of the story. They get involved in everything. You can tell they're very proud parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great stuff. Okay, did you have, you know, of the three stories that we've covered, would you have a particular favourite from those?
I'd have to say it's the Stanley Steel Rat for President. I really would. It was, like I say, it was the first one I read in the progs. I don't know if I'd seen...
You read this one as it was coming out, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I mean, yeah. When I started reading the progs, I fell in love straight away with Carlos's art on Strontium Dog. Johnny and Wolf just was one of my favourite stories, the artwork in that. I didn't see much of his Judge Dredd stuff. I think I saw some in the annuals and things when I first started reading. He wasn't doing a great deal with Judge Dredd back then. Certainly not regularly. And then when this came out, I just thought, wow, like one of my favourite books, one of my favourite artists. It was certainly something that I really enjoyed at the time. So I would say, out of the three of them, I think that's the best. I can see why they made all three of them, adapted all three of them. They're probably three of the most fun stories that probably lend themselves very well to the adaptation as a comic book. There's a lot going on in them, and they're all fairly fast-paced. There's lots of jeopardy in them. Jim gets caught. Jim fails to do things, but manages to turn things around. And they're just they're great stories. I've really enjoyed doing this sort of reading through it and preparing for this review, because I've gone back and read all the books again, and I've just really, really enjoyed them.
They really hold up, don't they?
They do, yeah. Terrific. I mean, when you consider the first one is 1963 or something like that, I think, when it was first out. The books themselves,
I think, yeah,
even earlier. The books are great. They're a great read. Really good fun. I think maybe even a little ahead of their time in some ways. The characters, like I say, he's a bit like that lovable rogue Han Solo type character. It's a different sort of sci-fi to the stuff that was around at the time, I think.
And, you know, obviously this is adapted, as we've said, and I was sort of racking my brains to think of other adapted stories for 2000 AD. As I say, Rick Random was appeared in comics before, and obviously Dan Dare in different incarnations had appeared before. Those are sort of legacy characters, I guess.
They are. I think the only ones that have really been in it are they did a Life Less Ordinary, didn't they?
Oh, of course they did. That's right. They did the time at the movie,
which I missed because I drifted away a bit by then.
Yes.
And I believe they did a tie-in with Shaun of the Dead as well.
That's right, yes, because that's also, I think that's on the DVD as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah.
The only other thing I can remember, and it's only because I listened to Space Spinner 2000 and they jogged my memory, there was a kind of adaptation of Clash of the Titans, but I think that was just an advertisement type feature.
Right.
So I don't think we can count that one.
Okay. But yeah, shout out to Conrad and Fox.
Yes.
Splendid Space Spinner 2000.
In fact, they covered, I think, I don't know if they've got onto the both, if they've done the first two Stainless Steel Rats, they certainly did the first one. While I was reading this, I enjoyed their take on it as well.
Yeah, presumably when they do the third story, they will put it out as one of their collections that they do. I think they're probably, they've not got as far as the third one yet, have they?
No, I think they're only at the sort of early 80s at the moment, not quite got to where we are.
Yeah.
So
as we record, they've just done, I think, Blockmania, and they're just about to discover, or Fox is about to discover what happens next.
Yes.
So yeah. Okay.
More fantastic Carlos stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh gosh, yeah. Yes.
Sorry, Fox, didn't mean to spoil that for you.
Well, they'll have finished that by the time we get this comes out, I'm afraid. So you mentioned that it was probably the best, or they were three good choices of Stainless Steel novels.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Prague. They've picked well.
Indeed, yeah.
I wonder why it never came back for more, actually.
Yeah, it's a shame because there's obviously more stories to tell. I think there's at least another five books. But I don't know. I mean, the thing is with 2000 AD, the way it is, there's just so many amazing characters, isn't there, that maybe they just sort of thought, well, you know, we've got enough. That's a good place to end it. It certainly is a good story to, if it's not going to come back again, it's not too sad that that's the last time we'll see Slippery Jim in this form.
I mean, you know, they're three wonderful stories to make a great collection, I think. Like yourself, I've got a fondness for the last one, but the first two, as you say, are just terrific as well. So yeah, great stuff. And of course, you know, I've said that Harry Harrison was a comic book writer, and we know he was a comic book reader as well, because we know he did actually read these in the prog.
Yeah,
because there's that great story. I went back and checked from prog 140. And it's actually the introduction to this volume written by Harry Harrison was supposed to appear in the first prog before the story. But obviously due to the way they, you know, had to cut and shuffle things around, it appeared after the Stainless Steel Rat story, which Harry Harrison then wrote in to complain about, put them right on it. And apparently he was awarded a £3 postal order or whatever it was for getting his letter published.
I wonder how he spent that.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's a shame that I don't think that's reprinted in this collection at all either. It's a bit of a shame. It would have been nice to have seen the letter. And the introduction that he wrote as well. Because obviously it sort of dumps you in. I mean, the book does itself. I mean, you you're straight into the action in the first book. Jim's just robbed a bank. You get to know him as the story progresses. There's no sort of slow introduction to the characters. It's just brilliant the way he does it. I would have loved to have seen what he wrote to as an introduction to the stories.
I shall have to I should have done this already. I shall have to consult the Beast database as maintained by Button Man on the 2080 forums,
yeah.
Which lists all the letters. So I should be able to search that and see if I can find the Harry Harrison letter.
Yeah, be interesting.
I'll see if I can get it and post it up on the Facebook group. Obviously there's Harry Harrison. We've talked at length about the wonders of Carlos Ascara, and we'll come back to his artwork in a moment for the Grail Page game. But yeah. We perhaps should mention Kelvin Gosnell, because obviously, you know, he was a science fiction fan. He suggested a lot of this stuff himself.
Yeah. Like you say, I believe it was his idea to do this.
Yeah.
Was he editor at the time when the first one came out?
So he was one of the early editors.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he was an actual editor when the first one came out. I think it was Steve McManus.
Right.
By that stage. And again, I think I'm right. Kelvin Gosnell had a lot to do with Star-Lord, didn't he?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, and, you know, trying to produce in a European-style science fiction magazine. So, did you enjoy what he's done with cutting down the three novels for sort of a 10-episode story in the prog?
Yeah, I mean, I think they all work really well. I mean, the basic stories remain the same. Like I said, there's areas where he chops it down, removes something that would work in the book but doesn't necessarily work on the comics page. Comics have to be quite fast paced, don't they, and move along at a fairly tight speed, and I think he does very well at that. It keeps the humor in, and there's a lot of direct quotes from the books and things that they say, but I think he does a really, really good job on getting the character into a different sort of medium. I mean, the good thing is you can read these three editions and go back, read the book, and there's something else to discover in the books. It's almost like a great compliment to each other. They're really well done, I believe.
Yeah, great stuff. I mean, you know, it is a particular skill to be able to produce a cliffhanger every fifth or sixth page.
Yeah, I mean, he judges that well, doesn't he?
Yeah, and of course, as you say, it is a funny strip in places, and as ever, complimented by Carlos, who can draw funny as well as exciting and sexy. Of course, he can do it all. So, yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to suit 2000 AD very well. I mean, he's a very 2000 AD character, isn't he? I mean, he's anti-establishment, he's tricky, he's funny, he's... everything that a 2000 AD character is and still is to this day.
Yeah, I mean, if I go back and look, I've just happened to flick to it on the digital at the moment, that first page of the Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World, that image of Jim and Angelina with guns blazing, or blasters blazing, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 2000 AD, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah, it is great. It's... Yeah, like you say, it's a shame they didn't do any more. But I don't know, the three books. I don't know, they're really well done, and if that's all there's going to be, then so be it. There's certainly nothing that you'd do any differently in any of them, I don't think.
Well, it does make for a neat collection, so it works quite well, and they're really worth a read. I mean, it's terrific stuff, adapted from a great science fiction author, and. Brilliantly done by Kelvin and Carlos. So well done. Hats off to everybody.
Yeah. Just to have a little bit of a chat about Harry. I mean, he's no longer with us, but he's left us with a lot of fantastic books and stories. His most famous one, obviously, being Make Room, Make Room, which was translated onto the silver screen as Soylent Green. But I've read a lot of his books. There's some really good stuff in there. And definitely, if you've not read any of his works, definitely well worth checking out.
Yes. I mean, he's a fascinating author. And I'm quite sure how he came to sort of found the Birmingham Science Fiction Society. But yeah, the other books I remember that my father was particularly fond of, as well as The Stainless Steel Rat, which my dad introduced me to, was, is it Bill the Galactic Hero?
Yes, it is. I think I've only read one or two of them, and that was many years ago. Jim was the character I fell in love with, really. I've read a couple of his other books, the Eden trilogy, which is basically about what would happen if dinosaurs evolved as humanoids. They're quite interesting. And I think he did a few collaborations with other science fiction writers as well. I've read a few of them. But yeah, I mean, he's got a fantastic writing style. It's just, yeah, really, really good stuff. And yeah, he's just, well, he's kind of one of the reasons I started reading 2000 AD as well.
Well, there you go. You know, can't say better than that. So what a legacy.
Yeah.
Make Room, obviously, Soylent Green. Those 70s science fiction movies with Charlton Heston in them. Soylent Green, The Omega Man and Planet of the Apes. Knockout combo.
Yeah. He's not done bad in picking his sci-fi movies, has he?
No, he did pick three good ones. And as you say, you know, Harry Harrison, who came up with the Soylent Green concept. And Bill the Galactic Hero, a few episodes ago, I had Nathan Duck on, and we were talking about the VCs and science fiction, space war, basically.
Yeah.
And obviously Robert Heinlein's Starship Trooper, we sort of mentioned. And Bill the Galactic Hero was a sort of humorous riposte to some of the difficult politics, shall we say, of Starship Troopers.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing about this. I mean, that Stainless Steel Rat for President, I mean, it's done with a lot of humour and that, but there's behind that, there is quite a serious thing going on. I mean, it's definitely, you know, talking down the dictatorships and things like that. But it's done in such a way that it's just a rip-roaring story, really, isn't it? It's really well written.
Yeah, absolutely. Really great stuff. And as you say, with a sort of serious point about taking down, the dictator, who is quite appalling.
Yeah, horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the other interesting thing about him was also is that, and it's something that fascinated me as a child, or certainly sort of coming up into my early teens, was he was quite the promoter of the language of Esperanto as well. And
Right.
That's what Jim speaks, and it's apparently what we're all going to be speaking once we leave Earth and want to go to the other planets and become these future people that Jim and Angelina are.
Well, if it means I can meet Angelina, I might start the Esperanto classes again then.
Yeah, why not?
Absolutely. Okay, so wonderful stuff. Go to The Stainless Steel Rat and then maybe jump out and look at the works of Harry Harrison as well. It might spur you on to more. Okay, Jake, it's been great. We've got to, as ever, play the wonderful Grail Pages game. So I'm going to give you the choice of all of Carlos's wonderful artwork, including the two prog covers that we had, 171 and 393, or the cover to this collection. But you're going to have to narrow it down and just pick one piece.
Well, for me, there can only be one piece, I'm afraid. I mean, the page that you've spoken about, where you've got Jim and Angelina on the at the start of The Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World, is a fantastic piece of art. But my favourite, and it was from the minute I saw it on the shelf way back in 1983 or 84, wasn't it, is the front cover to Prog 393. Yes, 24th of November 1984. It's just an amazing piece of artwork. It really is. The front cover's just got Jim giving it the Richard Nixon, Angelina toting a gun, and then the back page has got all these terrible characters, the dictator and the secret police, and little shots of the car that we were talking about. the helicopter battle and the flight into space to hijack the broadcasting satellites. It's a great piece of art, and it's just a shame in the book it's only in black and white, because I remember the color version like it were yesterday. I really do.
Yeah, absolutely. What a fabulous piece. A wraparound cover by Carlos. As Jim Moon described it, it's one of those movie posters where it gives you a little bit of everything that's in the story in the poster.
Yeah, definitely.
Prog 393, 24th of November 1984.
Well worth the 22p.
Yes, absolutely. If only you could get that for 22p now.
Indeed, yeah. Yes. There's some funny little things in there as well. I mean, it's funny because it's got all sort of vote for Jim. Well, obviously in the story, he's not called Jim. As he runs for president, but down in the bottom corner, and it says Angelina for first lady up above Angelina's shoulder, and down below it says Nancy who. Yes. Obviously a little dig at the Reagans.
Well, the caption at the top says "Move over, Ron, slippery Jimmy Grizz is back."
Yeah.
So I presume this must have been American election time, presumably.
Yes, it's certainly got that sort of feel about it as well, hasn't it, with the ticker tape and the
Yeah. And how terrible we thought Ron Reagan was. Now we look back at him and think.
Yes. What a wonderful man.
He was great. Okay. Well, I'll grant you that wonderful wraparound cover. It is fantastic.
Thank you very much.
I was going to go for the first page of the Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World, but I'm actually going to jump forward one prog and take the first page of the second episode of The Stainless Steel Rat Saves the World, which in my digital collection is page 87. Jim has just time traveled and has appeared in a spacesuit in space, floating above the planet.
Yes, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's like something out of 2001, A Space Odyssey, where Carlos has put in some sort of, you know, the time travel effects. There's all these planets and stars reflected in Jim's helmet as he travels in time and then just sort of like pops into existence over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And just that image of Jim in his helmet and the immensity of space and time travel, I just love it.
Yeah, it's a very different piece of art for Carlos as well, just that one particular picture.
Yeah, page. It's great.
It's very sort of... It's like dreamlike, isn't it?
It is. If we were doing a Marvel Comics podcast, we'd say cosmic or something like that, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fantastic. So yes, look out for these in the Facebook Grail Pages Art Gallery, which we now have, thanks to a suggestion by Pete Wells, of course.
There's some good stuff in there.
there's been some great picks, and of course yours will go up there as well, Jake, and it becomes virtually yours.
Yeah. I wish I could get hold of something like that. I really do.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. So we should say that the Stainless Steel Rat paperback seems to be out of print at the moment. So I've been looking at the digital version, which is $9.99 for all the Apples, Androids and Windows 10s out there. Or you can get it DRM free directly from the 2000 AD online store.
Yeah. I feel I should apologise because I think I might have bought the last one. I do apologise to everyone. I didn't get it that long ago, so I think I was fairly lucky. I do like the physical books rather than reading it on my iPad. But yeah, I got it through the 2000 AD website, and it's a nice volume, and it was £15.99, so a little bit more than the 22p.
Okay. So presumably you may find copies still out there, and who knows, it may come back into print. It's got the black and white versions of the covers at the back. It's got that introduction to how he came up with the idea for the character as an introduction written by Harry Harrison. All it's missing is that letter.
Yeah, yeah, it's a
but
shame.
We'll try and correct that on the Facebook group and on the forum. I'll try and find it and post it.
Brilliant.
Jake, thank you so much for picking it. It's been a real sort of trip back in time, literally, coming away for me. you know, it's great seeing the prog versions, and it also reminds me of reading the novels back with my dad, because as I say, he was a great fan of all this sort of stuff as well and introduced me to so much of it. So I'm delighted you've come on the podcast and picked it.
It's been a pleasure. I'm glad I've brought back some good memories for you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. I mean, it's really, you know, we can't, I'm, you know, I'm always hyping stuff on this podcast, but we can't speak highly enough of it. It's wonderful. If you've not read it, or if it's been a while, then get yourself a copy.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and of course, up the Crystal Palace, we have to say as well.
Well, it's a bit of a struggle at the moment, and I do apologise to anyone that might look at my Twitter feed. But thank you for saying that.
Who knows? By the time this comes out towards the end of January, it might be all be coming up roses for you.
Yeah. I'm not convinced, but I might need a time helix.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Some of Jim's gadgets.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Jake. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody for listening to Mega City Book Club. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. Find out more on the Facebook page or by following me on Twitter at MCBC Podcast, and email comments, suggestions for future books and anything else to mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find all of the 56 or 57 episodes and all of my links at megacitybookclub.com. A nice, easy one to remember, megacitybookclub.com. So that'll do us, Jake. Up the palace. And thank you once again.
Thank you.
And until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we're passing judgment on another fine 2000 AD book, it's a goodbye from me. And
it's a goodbye from me. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.